Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 66. This is going to be another lesson from the Danaher Business System Office, the role and structure of your Lean office. Your office, your Lean office, everybody seems to have one these days. And by the way, I don't subscribe to the, hey, Toyota doesn't have a Lean office, so we shouldn't have one. It's almost like saying, I want to open up a sporting store like Cabela's, and I'm going to start as big as Cabela's. So Cabela's started in their garage. The guy made fishing lures, and as he got more interest in his fishing lures, he grew a business out of that. Today, it's now known as Cabela's. And for you foreign people who don't know what Cabela's is, it's a mega superstore for hunting, fishing, sports equipment, okay? You can't go to the end game. Toyota's been at this for 80 years, okay, plus. So I'm of the opinion you need a Lean office. I want to talk about the structure of a Lean office and the purpose and all the things involved of what I think makes a Lean office successful, okay? However, the first thing I think I'd like to tell you is if the Lean office does not build trust with the people that they're coaching, then you might as well forget it. I had a client once who, about a $5 billion company, and this was the instruction from the CEO to the head of the Lean office. I want you to go in and find out what these guys are doing, and you let them know that if they don't get their act together, blah, 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 and there'll be consequences, and forget it. So I asked this guy who ran the Lean office, how often is your phone ringing? How often are people calling you to come into their company to help them? No, none. His phone was sitting there. He had to impose himself on these businesses. He wasn't wanted. He wasn't looked at as a help to the organizations. Matter of fact, and one of the things I want to talk about, I'll talk about it now, is Lean audits. He would go in with an audit, give everybody a scorecard, a report card, if you will, compile all that data into some semblance of a report, force rank all his facilities, and put it out into the public and said, okay, here's our best performing facility and here's our least performing facility, shaming everybody on that list, okay? Even so that, hey, I was number three last month. Now, this quarter, number eight, what happened? And these audits were all tool-based. As a matter of fact, he had me go out and look at one of his gold standard facilities. And they were running MRP, they had push, they had a big rework department, and they were a gold standard facility. It was gold, silver, and bronze, okay? And I'm saying, wow, okay, maybe it's the tallest guy in a pygmy village, and they're only 3 feet tall, okay? But that's just the wrong way to handle a Lean office. And by the way, they were adamant to say that, oh yeah, all of our facilities are our customers. Well, I've never seen a supplier audit their customer. Have you? Okay, so that's all BS, right? That doesn't work. This particular Lean office had zero trust. They were more like corporate spies under the guise of, hey, I'm from corporate, I'm here to help. Not really. I'm from corporate and I'm here to spy. Okay, that's what's going on. So we'll talk more about that in a subsequent episode. But if you can't build trust, you're in trouble. People are going to want to have you come in to help them, okay? Now, let's talk about the purpose of a Lean office. I hear so many times our Lean office is about putting points on the board. I hate that term, putting points on the board, okay? which means you're going to go in and fix a bunch of stuff. The number one purpose, in my opinion, and this is what I did at Danaher, our number one purpose was to develop lean capabilities within the organization, both explicit knowledge and tacit knowledge, know-how, knowledge, right? Hands-on knowledge as to how to really do all this stuff. That was our number one export, if there was such a thing as a product, that was our product. And by the way, our CEO, George Sherman, who I reported to for close to a decade, never once asked me how much money the DBS office created. Never once asked me to justify the DBS office. Never once asked me, hey, how many points did you put on the board? Because he knew that the responsibility for performance was with the operating units. Okay. Now, I had a very good relationship with George in that he would never sell me out. He would never say, call a president up and say, hey, Mark told me he saw this and this and this, and what's going on? Guess what? Mark's never going to get asked back to that company again. George was very street smart that way. I can't say everybody at Danaher was that way, okay? But George was, and I was protected in that regard, and I was very lucky, number one. Number two is I was very careful about what I told George because there's certain things I could handle myself. I didn't need to spread a bunch of gossip. Look, when you're doing a transformation, there are things that are going to go wrong, okay? There are going to be disagreements as to how things go on, and I wasn't always right. So I never used that unless I thought it was mission critical to bring George in because I needed his help. So I had a lot of trust in the company. I built a lot of trust within Danaher. However, there were still some organizations and some executives that didn't trust me at all. And I think you could have put Tayashi Ono in my seat and they wouldn't have called Tayashi Ono in to help them because they had no trust. They were very political people. They were also of the opinion that they knew better than anybody else. They were the smartest guys in the room. And if you don't believe me, all you had to do is ask them. Okay. So you can't get everybody's trust, but you have to build trust as best you can. I think we did a pretty good job of that because we were always in demand. My people, myself, we were always in demand going in and helping our organizations teach them how to fish. Now, so capability building is a real key. And also coaching leaders, coaching them as to how to ask the right questions. Many leaders got into their roles of responsibility and promoted as such because they were able to come up with the right answers. Find this more on the technical side than anything else, in the engineering and all that side of the business. They need to learn how to ask the right questions so that their people can come up with the solutions and actually own the solutions. That's what you really need to coach these leaders on, how to handle these kind of things. It's not about coming up with the right answer. It's about how to ask the right questions so that your people can self-actualize and come up with their own solutions. That's how you build capability within the company. Okay. Okay. One of the things I had to do, and I did do, was work with the senior executives to understand the strategic imperatives of the business. Now, we sat down every quarter. I sat down with George Sherman and the executive team, Larry Culp, who's not at GE, and other executives. And we talked about what the priorities were in our organization, okay? And there were certain divisions that we didn't want to mess with, quite frankly, and we didn't spend a lot of time on. I would never tell the people running those companies that they weren't a priority. But what we would say to them is, look, if you want to get trained on DBS, we want to invite you into other things that are going on at a more priority company. Again, I'd never use those words. But we'd say, hey, you want to learn SMED? We're doing a SMED over in the tool group, which was a big priority for us. Come on over and learn, take it back, and then we'll come in for a day and maybe see how you guys are doing. Okay. That's how we handle that. Okay. So you got to think about priorities here. Number one, even within a strategic business, we would understand what value streams or what product lines were priority. So for example, Altoona, Pennsylvania was Vitaroot. Okay. Vitaroot made tank level sensors, all the underground storage tank sensors for gas stations, and had all the controls with it and all that. That was a strategic product for us. On the other side of that factory, they made analog gas meters. Believe it or not, they were still making those for third world countries. That was not strategic for us. So it's not like we didn't apply the Danaher business system on that side of the business. We just spent a lot of resources over there, and whatever we did do, whether it was standard work, cell design, single minute exchange of die, whatever it was, we did on the tank level sensor side and had the people from the other side of the business, the analog gas meters, come and learn and take it back. We got that specific in terms of targeting this. And the other thing I think you need to understand is that your lean resources within your organization need to be centered around where your biggest issues are and where your biggest strategic priorities are. I don't subscribe to the notion that for every 1,000 people, you should have so many lean people, CI people, whatever you want to call them. I don't go by that rule at all. In some cases, you need more or less, depending on what's going on and where you're at. So that's something that I think is very important to think about. Okay. So understanding your priorities, working with strategic leadership. Now, as the head lean person in your company, you need to forge a relationship with the senior executives and almost view them as an extension of your office, from the respect that you want them to help you continue to evolve and develop your business system. The Danaher business system was not immune to Kaizen. If it was, we'd be hypocrites. We kept getting better. We kept making changes. We kept evolving the Danaher business system. Matter of fact, there were some things I look back on now when we were doing that were just wrong. One of them was audits. Okay. Certifications. I'm not a big certification guy. Okay. He has a lot of political issues with certifications. So there's some things that we did that I would do differently now. And there were some things we did back then that we changed. Okay. The Danaher business system was not immune to Kaizen, and neither should your lean office as well. It is not a gold standard. Matter of fact, I had a client who it was a multi-billion dollar company, and the lady that ran the lean office came up with this one, she called it a glass wall. It was a big glass wall on wheels, kind of like a big, you know, roll around board. And it was very prescriptive as far as what would go on that. Up in the left-hand corner, you had your value stream map. On the right-hand side, you had this. You had these metrics down on the lower left-hand corner. This, and you could not change it. If you wanted to change it, you needed an act of Congress to change it. Okay. It was unbelievable. So everybody, she rolled it out. Now, let's for a moment say that this glass wall configuration was the best thing in the world since sliced bread. Okay. The fact that she jammed it down everybody's throat, it got a lot of resistance. Matter of fact, I would go into some of these factories. Hey, how's your glass wall doing? How are you guys using that? Yeah, we only pull it out when corporate comes in. We don't find much use for it. We keep it over in the corner. When they're coming in, we pull it out and dress it up. Then we put it away again. Okay, so it wasn't getting any buy-in because she forced it down their throats. Matter of fact, George Sherman one day came to me. Again, George was our CEO that I reported to, and God rest his soul. He passed away a couple of years ago. A great leader. And he said to me, Mark, you know, I was just in our Cleveland facility, and then I went down to North Carolina, and they're using different visual management tools. So I looked at George and I said, well, okay, what's the problem? He said, well, I have to relearn everything every time I go into these facilities. Shouldn't they all be the same? So I said to George, I didn't realize you were the customer, George. And he kind of laughed and he chuckled. He goes, okay, what do you mean by that? I said, well, look, you go into these companies maybe a couple, three times a year, okay? If I'm not smart enough to come up with the one visual management system that will apply to a company that makes 1 million sockets a year in Gastonia, North Carolina, for Sears Craftsman hand tools, and a company up in Massachusetts that made 2 periscopes a year for the Navy. I'm just not smart enough to do that. And let's say I was smart enough to do that. Well, if I didn't get their input on it, there's no buy-in, okay? Just like with the glass walls. So you there's a very fine line here. It's almost kind of like the federal government and the state government and how the founders had that clear, that line that says what's a state's right issue and what's a federal issue. There's a very fine line here as for what you legislate as a standard in a non-negotiable, which I'll talk about in a little bit, and where you let people kind of, you know, you set the lanes up for them so that they could play within those lanes. And that's how the Danaher business system evolved, because somebody would come up with a new visual management. I'm using visual management as an example. It applies to everything. But somebody would come up with a new visual management methodology, and they'd add it to our database. And all of a sudden, it's out there for somebody else to use. Or they can go in and say, hey, I see something being done here in Cleveland and something being here in Mexico. Geez, I think I can combine those two and really come up with a neat thing for our business. And all of a sudden, they're developing stuff as we go on. So there is an argument to be made that we should have a standard. And there's also an argument to be made that you've got to let people do their own thing. Okay, now when it comes to standards, people would ask me, what was the culture at Danaher? And I would argue, or I would answer, I don't know, what division do you want to talk about? Because all of our companies had a different culture. You know, down in Tennessee, people wanted to leave at 3 o'clock during fishing season and go fishing. In Connecticut, they would have worked 90 hours a day if there was such a thing, okay, with no time off. Okay, it's just a different culture. And of course, you go from country to country. Everybody has different cultures. So the one thing I'll say, the one thing that though that held Danaher together was an adherence to the lean principles and to our values. All right. That was common across the way. So let's get back to visual management, where I was more concerned in what I told George. I'm more concerned that the tenets of visual management are intact, that it was status at a glance, abnormality detection immediately. Anytime during the day, I don't have to wait for a report to be run to find out how I did today. I should be able to see it as I walk by. Facilitates problem solving, all that stuff, right? Those are the principles of visual management. And I said, George, I don't care if they use the back of a napkin or put some kind of big digital board together, which I probably wouldn't suggest. But anyway, I want those principles to be adhered to, not what method they're using to get that. Okay, and it's more important that whatever method they come up with, it's theirs, they own it, they developed it, and they'll be more likely to not only use it, but more likely to improve it as well as time goes on. So this one company that had the glass walls, there's no way anybody could make any changes to that without having the wrath of this woman who was running the lean office, okay? So that wasn't going to work. So that all stagnated, and it just didn't get used. It was a big waste of time. So that's the key here is to make sure we do that. Now, as far as principles go, those were things that we assured were going to be standard throughout the company, okay? So let me talk about some more things that the lean office needs to work on. Let's go right into the non-negotiables. Setting standards for non-negotiables was really key, and this is something that we set a standard for And let me give you some examples. On-time delivery. We wanted all of our companies to measure on-time delivery to customer request date, not to our promise date. Okay? Non-negotiable. Now, you want to measure to promise date? Fine, go ahead and do it. But you have to measure to request date. That was a non-negotiable. That your daily management would be looking at safety, quality, delivery, cost, and those categories. Now, for every company, the metrics might be different depending on the nature of the business, okay? But safety, delivery, in that order, it's a hierarchy, safety, quality, delivery, and cost, okay? And we would all make decisions based on that hierarchy of importance, all right? That we would have work standards or standard work, they are different, work standards for and documentation of all our key processes. Now, just because we said that didn't mean that overnight on Monday we came in and everything was documented. No, it wasn't. Because documentation is only part of putting together a good process. And I have an episode, I think, somewhere out there in this podcast called the 10 Rules of a Process. Okay, those are my 10 rules of what really makes a good, robust process. Okay, so these are the kind of things we would demand at minimum a 50% improvement per year in quality and in lead time and in safety. And matter of fact, safety wasn't even, there was like a zero. We're not going to tolerate any rate of improvement. We want zero, okay? Zero incidences on safety. Now, you may find 50% improvement is not enough to get you where you need to be. Now, for example, if you're sitting with a process that had 50,000 parts per million, if I improve 50% per year, I think the math says something like 13 or 14 years to get to Six Sigma, 3.4 parts per million. Not good enough. So maybe the first couple of years, you got to improve by 80%, 90%. Okay. But at minimum, it was a non-negotiable. We don't want people coming in saying, we're improving our quality this year 10%. No, not good enough. Okay. You're not going to move the best, the needle if you have those kind of lethargic goals. Matter of fact, a lot of those goals that are that, you know, lethargic can be done just based on common cause variation. All right. So you're not really changing anything to get that. What's the other roles of the lean office? You have to be people who provide thought leadership to the company. Okay. This is in addition to building capabilities. By the way, let me go back on building capabilities for a minute. In order to build capabilities, in order to learn lean, you got to do it hands-on. This is not about PowerPoint presentations and talking about it. It's about going in and actually making breakthrough changes, okay? So the projects that you work on where you are building capabilities should be meaningful to your business and to your strategy. So you are going to get great results by focusing on the right areas. For example, I don't want to go in and teach somebody how to 5S their mailroom. That's not strategic. I'm not saying you should have a messy mailroom. Then I'll probably ask, why do you have mail at all? But you see, we still should be working on the most strategic things to get benefit, not go in and teach tools for the sake of tools. And that is a mistake we made early on at Danaher. We became more enamored with the Danaher business system than we did our own objectives. And that changed. We changed that. We got hung up in this. Like, hey, how many Kaizens did you do? And how many people did you train? Your customer doesn't care about that. Your customer doesn't care about how many Kaizens you did, how many people you trained. What do they care about? On-time delivery, lead time, flexibility, great value for the price they're paying, great quality, okay, and whatever else they may want from you, okay? So don't become hung up on activities. These activities that don't tie back to your business strategy are meaningless, okay? So I just want to make sure that when we build capability, we're working on projects that are, in fact, meaningful. Okay, let me give you a little case in point. Jake Break, where DBS started, and I happened to be there at that time, 1987. The first Kaizen we did was on the Caterpillar value stream, which represented 1/3 of our business. Okay, we make Jake Breaks for the Caterpillar company. And the leadership at the time, the local leadership, wanted to work on something called an auto lash. An auto lash was a mechanical unit that went to the jake brake, no bigger than a pen, one of your pens. That's what an auto lash kind of looked like. It's about the size of one. And the cell that it took to make the auto lash was probably as big as a conference table. Okay. That's what they wanted to work on first. And George Koenigsaker, to his credit, said, nope, not big enough. We're not going to really send a message to the organization if that's what we work on. We're doing the Caterpillar cell. Okay. It was a big risk. It worked out. Come to find out, we did most of it wrong, because when Shingajitsu came in, we had to go in clockwise, not counterclockwise. And Iwata and Nakao came in and says, no good, NG, no good. You guys did this wrong. So we had to redo it again anyway. And by the way, we got so good at Kaizen and Jake Break, we were moving equipment like you would move your shoes in your closet. It was so easy for us to reconfigure the plant. We reconfigured that plant. Oh, the 5 years I was there, probably, 15, 20 times. I mean, it was incredible how many times we just moved stuff around so easily. We got so good at moving stuff around, hooking things up and all this. And this is pretty big equipment. Okay. This is not small little, computer type equipment. So, just thought I'd let you know that you should be working on something that's meaningful, because it does send a signal that, wow, this stuff really works. Right. Let's go through the other roles. So thought leadership, bring it in the latest and greatest. Now, you got to be careful with this, because you don't want to derail people. I get into a lot of arguments with theory of constraints people and explain why we didn't put TOC into DBS. And I'm not going to go through that here. I had another podcast episode on that, so I'm not going to go through that. But be careful what you're leading as far as thoughts go, okay, because you can really confuse a lot of people. All right. You also have to control the message, because you're going to have people coming in. We had a whole influx of people from GE that want to substitute DBS with Six Sigma, which I fought hard. I wasted a lot of time fighting the people coming in. They're setting up Six Sigma clubs and all these elite little cliques that were not inclusive of bringing in the operators or anybody else for that matter, if you weren't certified. Okay. So, I had to spend a lot of time fighting that whole onslaught of Six Sigma clowns coming into the company, trying to uproot what we were doing. Okay. Another item, training materials. Having a good base of training materials that you could use across the business. Okay. Having a library. By the way, a lot of this stuff I'm talking about would be housed in an internal website where people can download this stuff and what have you. Scheduling. I should be able to go in and say, hey, look, they're doing a single mint exchange of die Kaizen in Seattle, and sign up for that class and send myself to that class, okay, or that Kaizen. Remember, all of the things that we did were hands-on. They weren't just classroom, maybe 20% classroom and 80% hands-on, right? Yokoten. Spreading best practices. How do I let somebody know about something, a breakthrough I put together in Taiwan that may need it in Cleveland, okay, or in Chicago or in Paris or wherever we may be? Spreading best practices from a Yokoten perspective is another element of that website and getting people to understand what's going on. Benchmarking and best practices. Okay, what are the best practices that are going out there today, right? And that's continuing to evolve. And you just got to be careful with this stuff, just like with thought leadership, because AI now is the biggest thing. Everybody thinks that you just plug in AI and everything's going to be better, right? You'll have global wonderfulness. World hunger will be solved. Global peace will be solved because we have AI. It doesn't work that way. So be careful with benchmarks that you don't get people going off the beaten track, because don't forget, basics always work. Okay. Always stick back to the basics. I'm not saying you don't use AI. I'm just saying don't go hog wild on it as it's the silver bullet that's going to solve all your problems, because it's not. Okay. So that's another. So you have, as you can see, with thought leadership and benchmarks and best practices, you have to have a policing role to play too, in terms of how you get people to understand the latest and greatest without having people go off the deep end, right? Not an easy job, by the way. I mentioned non-negotiables, and I mentioned the whole business about audits. Don't do them. Please don't do these audits, okay? And these audits are a waste of time. People window dress anyway. They know you're coming in. They usually tool audits. You know, I gave the example on one of my previous podcasts that, you know, I had two houses built, same tools, pretty much the same materials. One house, the roof leaked, the basement leaked, had all kinds of problems with it. If I were to audit both sets of construction personnel, they probably all would have passed with flying colors as to how they used a hammer, how they used a saw, how they used whatever other equipment is necessary to build a house. But my roof leaked on the first house, and it didn't on the second house. Okay. Tool audits are a waste of time. Okay. Matter of fact, audits are going to put you in a policing mode, and you're going to lose trust. I open up this podcast episode. We're talking about trust. Don't do audits, please. Okay. Okay, and remember, you're not a set of hands to help people do projects. So I had a set of rules when somebody would call my office. First, they had to be a priority company. Of course, I couldn't tell people they were or were not, but that was my first litmus test. Second, I would ask, is your area you need help on in your strategy deployment? At Danaher, we call it the policy deployment. When I put that in, that's what I learned from the Japanese. They still call it policy deployment today. I don't like the name. When I started my consulting business, I changed it to strategy deployment. I think that's more indicative of what this is. But anyway, I would say, is this part of your policy deployment? And if the answer is yes, okay. The next litmus test was, who from leadership is going to be on this Kaizen team? We're not doing it without leadership involved. And I don't mean you come in and audit once an hour a day. Hands-on, full-time, you got to be on it. Because if you're not teaching your leaders how to do this, and they all, by the way, most leaders think they already know how to do this. Most leaders already think they know what lean is. And my analogy is, I cannot learn how to hit a golf ball just by watching Tiger Woods. I've got to pick up the golf club and actually swing it, all right? You're not going to learn from a video. You're not going to learn from a podcast. I got the best book in the world, The Five Lessons from Ben Hogan on golf, the best book in the world. I've read it a million times. I could tell you how to hit a golf ball. I can't show you, okay? So you got to do this to learn it, okay? And it's tough sometimes because a lot of leaders already think they know how to do this, and they don't. Okay, not unless you've done it. So make sure that leadership is involved before you spend your resources training people that are not going to have the power to institute an effective, sustainable change. Okay, that was my litmus test as we went through. Okay, all right. Let me finish by talking about the structure. I'm of the strong opinion that the top lean leader in the company should report directly to the CEO. I think you lose something when it reports to somebody in manufacturing, because it does then get looked at as a manufacturing play. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the activities that person performs with whatever group he has under him or her are all manufacturing oriented. Geez, you're reporting to the manufacturing guy, functional leader. Why am I going to have you go work in sales, right? So that person needs to be a strategic business partner. They need to have financial acumen, business acumen, and it's a real hard role to fill with the right people. Most people put engineers in there that have very limited business experience, and they fail, okay, because they just don't know how to think broadly about strategy. They don't have financial acumen, and they can't really relate very well to the leadership team that they're a part of. All right. So I strongly feel that person should report to the CEO and nobody else. That's my view. The lean leader needs to understand how to set up their organization. Now, there's an argument to be made that says you have a large central office and or a decentralized office. I'm not here to tell you which is better because every organization is different and every organization has a different culture, okay? However, you do need to have within your companies, within your operating units, lean professionals that you're able to transfer knowledge to in addition to the leadership at that company, okay? So you need lean coaches, deployment leaders and lead coaches. Not everybody's going to be schooled in everything there is to know about lean. So you have to think about that from a competency perspective. And by the way, this doesn't only apply to the shop. It applies to the administrative side of the business, applies to the commercial side of the business. We have to have people who are covering the enterprise. Remember, this is called the Danaher Business System. It's not called the Danaher Production System. By the way, it was called that at one time, and we changed it. We changed it to the business system. Had I known what I know now, I probably would have called it the Danaher Enterprise System, okay? I don't like the word operating system because operating system, so many companies call their lean system the operating system. That just smells of manufacturing. And you get salespeople saying, yeah, that's operations. That's not me. I'm in sales, right? So I like the word enterprise, you know, or business, but, you know, the business system moniker has been kind of worn out over the course of time. But regardless, it's got to be an enterprise-wide focus, okay? And you need to structure at each division your people that are going to coach, train, and you're going to train them as well to coach others, okay? Because teaching people how to facilitate and how to train and how to communicate are key. And a lot of these people should be your future leaders. These people should be in these roles for a couple of years to be your future leaders because you want your leaders to be able to operate within the context of your business system, okay? In terms of lean thinking and all that. So that's a real key. Now, one of the problems that we faced in the early days is the divisions put their least common denominator into these roles, people that think the most expendable, okay? And they didn't have the talents. They were good people, but they were not positioned to this kind of role. And it was a square peg in a round hole. And it was unfair to them too, right? It was unfair to the people that you put in these roles. So make sure you put your best and brightest, your future leaders in these roles, the up-and-coming type people, and using your lean office at the local level and at the corporate level to be a career development stop. So people knew that they needed to learn DBS. Matter of fact, we recruited people from Harvard and some of these other great business schools like Darden and what have you, and they wanted to come and work in the Danaher Business System office. And this is during the dot-com era where all their buddies were making millions of dollars at cocktail parties, 24-year-old kids making millions of dollars in the dot-com era, thinking that it was their talent that did it all, right, until it crashed. So people wanted to learn. Okay, and these were the future leaders of our country, of our company. So that's another thing. So the lean office to me is important how you structure it. I'm not here to give you any definitive answers as to how many and how much. Remember, you want to put your people where the problems are. All right. So don't go by some ratio of so many lean people per 100, per 1,000. Employees. That doesn't work. Okay. What else? I'm trying to look at this now and see what else I've got for you. I think that's it. So remember, build trust. Don't do audits. Your number one purpose is to export capabilities within the company. Okay. Export capabilities. And then all the things I talked about is how to structure a lean office are really key. All right. And you are a coach, and you need to consider your leadership team, the C-suite, as an extension of your office to be thought partners, to be people that are weighing in, giving you advice as to, or at least their thoughts on to how to take the next steps with your lean office and how we need to modify it, how do we need to improve it. Because if you do it in a vacuum, you're going to fail. You've got to bring them in, and then they'll have ownership over what it is that we're doing. In the meantime, it's a great opportunity for you to coach them as well. Okay. All right. I think that is it as far as probably a lot more to talk about, but time being what it is, I think this is a pretty good overview here of how we thought about this at Danaher. And like I said, we did make some mistakes. And matter of fact, I've got a presentation called Humble Errors. I might do that as an episode just to let you know what the mistakes were made back then. It wasn't perfect. We didn't have all the wisdom and all the right answers up front to say, here's how we did it. And then we never tripped. We never failed. We never made any mistakes. We just had infinite wisdom, infinite wisdom of a vision. And we just could do no wrong. That is so far from the truth. Okay. And so I want to be very honest about that, because a lot of times when you hear people talk about their successes, they come off like they could have done no wrong. Okay. And that's bull. I hear people talking about it in that regard for companies that were mediocre companies, like they had all the answers. And I look at the companies, I look at the stock price, I look at their performance, and I say, wow, what really were they bragging about? Okay. So anyway, be humble, experiment. That fine line between what's legislated as a non-negotiable and where you're going to let people play so that your business system can improve is very important. And that's also a good way for you to build trust. Okay, I keep coming back to that trust thing. So I started with trust, and I'm going to end with trust. Okay, have a great one. This was episode 66, the role of the Lean Business System Office and how we looked at it from the Danaher perspective. Okay. Stay lean. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.